From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 143 of On the Tropes. We are continuing Noirvember on this episode where we cover Private Eye Monologue. And we'll talk about our top five favorite Private Eye Monologues. But first, as always, I'm your host, Nick. And joining with me today are three private dicks.
Sir?
Come back to that joke.
And Kyle, you should have started it off with one of your patented monologues like you do or used to for Beastools.
That would have involved me writing something.
Yeah. And,
that takes a lot of work.
I love the fact that you just keep calling us. This is an excuse.
Private dicks.
No, our November is just an excuse for you to call us dicks all month.
Right. Private dicks.
Private dicks, yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah. Should we get into our top five?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, so I'm going to read from the TV Tropes description. It says, the signature narration style in film noir, a bored-looking, world-weary, utterly cynical, hard-boiled detective, episode 142, with his feet on the desk, meets a femme fatale, while the voiceover gives us his mental play-by-play. The Private Eye Monologue is characterized by certain pronunciation and speech patterns that make it immediately recognizable and utterly cool. The most basic rule to remember is that it is a monologue, so it is spoken, not written. Preferably in a deep chain smoker baritone.
That's a very specific.
Yeah.
That's the thing about some of their descriptions when I'm like, when I look up their list to get sort of inspired to think of my own ideas. Some of their descripting, like, I was like trying to think of that scene. Exactly, you know, and I couldn't think of too many ideas, but as you said, you can sort of branch off from that. It's just, yeah. I don't know.
What I like about this trope is that it kind of adds like a novel-like quality to a lot of film noirs. And the other thing I like about it is people tend to say that, like, if you're screenwriting, having a narrator is like the laziest.
It's kind of a crutch.
Thing. Yeah, it's a lazy crutch to fall back on. But at least a couple on my list use this narration in an interesting way that actually serves the plot in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into that. But I don't think it has to be a crutch. I think you can use it to aid the story. And when they do that right, it's really cool.
Also, it's a way to have the character. To characterize your protagonist without forcing him into artificial conversations because he's talking to you. So you don't get that with, never mind.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, it's just
okay.
The ear thing.
Yeah, that's all I was trying to say. Is that it's a way to hear the narrator, your protagonist's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, and you get to learn a little bit more about like the inner workings of the same way with any narrator, but it's something that for whatever reason in noir tends to happen a lot. I don't know if it's because a lot of, and not all of them did this, but a lot of them are screenplays by like people like Raymond Chandler, who's an author. But I think like To Have and Have Not is kind of has some noir elements, but
yeah,
which was written by Hemingway. But I don't think that has a Private Eye Monologue or narration, if I remember right. I haven't seen it in a while, but
part of it might be that they are putting together a puzzle, and it does serve to like refocus the audience for a fairly complex overarching theme.
Yeah. Well, and the detective is usually working by themselves, so it's like instead of talking to a sidekick or something, they're just talking to the audience, and it's a little easier that way.
It is,
and
like that's exposition.
That's why Robin. Yeah.
Sorry. I was going to say it's useful for exposition too, just because if there's something really complicated going on, it's nice to have somebody tell you what to resum everything up.
Yeah.
You were saying something about Robin?
Yeah. So Bill Finger made Robin. I think it was Bill. Yeah, it was Bill Finger. He made Robin the Boy Wonder. Because
just so Batman would have someone to talk to.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Somebody, stand in for the audience.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
That means so lonely.
And as a stand in for the audience, so that's why it's a little kid, because that's who was reading the comics at the time.
Which is weird, because I feel like comics in general, they always have that panel that is like, it's not Batman speaking, it's the narration, or it's something, but I guess...
Not in the 40s.
Not in the 40s,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, though.
I wonder if they were, if Batman came out now instead of a little kid, because it was little kids reading it, if it'd be like an angry 20-something on Twitter who's telling you you're gay because you didn't like the last Christopher Nolan movie. That would be a... For the record, I did like Dunkirk, so I did like the last Christopher Nolan movie a lot. It's really good. Have you guys caught up with Dunkirk?
No,
I know it's not topical at all. It was
I haven't seen a movie in theaters this year yet.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Same.
Yeah. What?
Man, I've finally been like I've been watching so many movies at the nightlight. Just
yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to get out of the house, but.
When did Batman vs. Superman come out? That might have been the last movie I saw.
Last movie? Maybe?
Man, sad.
Not like...
that was the last movie you saw. Did it just burn you out, or are you just done with film?
Yeah. After that, you're like, no more.
Done with film. Just... Now, I mean, it was like a very crowded, uncomfortable movie-going experience, and I'm just like, I could just watch stuff.
Yeah, that. Just the feeling of disappointment. And
I mean, it was sad. It was sad.
I do hate being near other people in theaters.
I hear you.
I almost always hate the person sitting near me.
Nelly.
Yeah, Nelly.
No.
Your wife.
Because she often doesn't come into the movies with me. Like, I saw Blade Runner by myself, and the people in the row next to me were talking throughout. So I...
What's the point of going to a movie you're trying to talk during it?
Because people are fucking assholes.
It's horrible.
I'm not clapping. We're leaving that in. They need to know.
Yeah.
Also completely off topic. However, maybe for the last episode it would have been slightly more. Anybody else seen The Deuce? Deuce? No.
Is it any good?
I don't know what that is.
Man, it's good.
Is it?
It's really good. Yeah. It's strong. I mean, I'm watching The Wire right now. I can run through that again. And
is The Deuce David Simon?
Yeah, it's David Simon. It's you can see the influence, you know, you can see the David Simon influence on it, and it's not as good. However, it's very good.
Oh, it's not as good as the best TV show ever?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so you can't really try to compare anything to The Wire. It's like, yeah. Well, yeah, it's a very worthy follow up to
it. Nice. I'll check it out. Should we jump into our top fives? Yeah.
Okay. I just think it's funny that our like first section is so much shorter nowadays.
The top five is the more interesting section anyway.
No, I hear you. No. And we talk a lot about this trope in the top fives, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's just jump into it.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Wait, oh, right into it?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going right into it. Number five is the narrator from Fight Club. Nick said I could use this one, so I'm using it.
Go ahead.
Ed Norton is... very cynical and dry, and his narration adds a lot to that movie. I love when there's like a big twist in the movie, and what's his line like about put your tray in upright position or something, and like it's like the narrator's kind of reacting as to how the audience is feeling at that time, but he does it in sort of a weird way. But yeah, I thought it was awesome. And the fact that he is just the narrator.
Like, yeah,
he doesn't have a name. And when you find that out, it's like so weird. But yeah, he's my number five. What's your number five, Themo?
My number five is from the Korean film Old Boy.
Mm.
Kind of tripped over saying that. But there's a couple... of lines that I just love from it, and for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm not even going to spoil the first act because it's amazing. But he talks about he goes through a type of training, and he asks, "Does X amount of years of pretending to fight pay off?" And then he gets into a fight, and I won't spoil whether or not he does well, but that is mirrored later. And it's just a really lovely kind of bouncing off of itself as he's trying to put together this mystery and essentially what amounts to like unjust imprisonment for him for years. So a little bit of a spoiler.
Does he narrate through the whole movie or just
like, I just the remember beginning? The first half, first yeah, part.
That's what I thought.
Sir, you're number five.
Number five is probably for the Max Payne video games.
Nice.
I think it was just really a cool touch on that whole series. I mean, it's I don't know how the games ended up. I think I played up to two. I don't know if there was any past that or not.
Yeah, they came out with the one within the last few years, and he's definitely like an older, grizzled guy. But cool. Yeah, it's
I
think they still do the same.
The first, you know, the first one and the second after were like, I thought it was really cool. Just way to kind of pull you into that world. Like, it made it so much more immersive, and you really felt like you were one of those old characters. So,
because they would intercut with like comic book panels, and he would read all the dialogue. And I think in the first game, at least, you saw Max Payne as this happy guy, and then they unfold the crap that happened to his family, and then he turns into this really sort of cynical
Punisher life kind of character.
Yeah.
I always thought it was cool because he was kind of like Frank Castle, and yet also kind of like Bruce Willis in Die Hard. Very similar to that, too, you know.
And they utilized, like, bullet time, like, because it was right after The Matrix came out. And
That was a big part of it, too. But, yeah, the voice, for sure, is just one of those iconic video game voices where he was just so, like, emotionless during the entire narration.
Nick, what's your number five?
My number five, it's another Max. It's Maximilian Cohen from Pi, Darren Aronofsky's first movie. This is kind of like a neo-noir sci-fi movie where he narrates the entire time. And what I like about his narration is he begins a lot of them with like the time as if he's logging something. So it's like 11:15, restate my assumptions. One, mathematics is the language of nature. And then that's where he does a lot of his explaining, because the kind of idea behind Pi is a little bit complex. So having a narrator to help suss out everything is pretty helpful, but I think that narration device serves this movie really well, in the way, just the style of it, the way the guy does it, I think is really effective. What's your number four, Kyle?
My number four is the opening monologue by Ben in Full Throttle. I don't think
awesome.
I don't think he narrates throughout the whole game either. For that, I think it's just maybe just that beginning part. But he definitely has the voice for it. And in the opening monologue, he's talking about like what he thinks about or what reminds him of Marine. And I think he says the smell of asphalt and trouble or something like really kind of a cool opening to the game. He's this biker in this biker gang, and it really sets up the mystery of the game really early on. And I'm not a huge fan of point and click games. I'm not even really a huge fan of Double Fine games, but I thought that was like a really cool way to intro you into that story.
Is there a new Full Throttle out?
It was just they remastered it recently, so I was able to play it like a cleaner version of it, and it was
awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's Mark Hamill as the bad guy in
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name? I forget what his name is. He's got like a really weird name.
I don't remember.
Like, but yeah, when I heard Mark Hamill, I was like, that's awesome. He's basically like the Joker. but yeah, that's my number four. What's your number four, Themo?
My number four is a series of movies based on a television show, and it's The Naked Gun. And to echo Sir's disclaimer earlier from last week's episode, there are certainly things in there that are probably going to offend people. I don't remember. I haven't seen it since I was quite young myself, which probably too young to actually watch these films. Regardless, a lot of the jokes were folded into his internal monologue. Yeah.
Nice. Sir,
number four.
That's my number four. I'm going to go with Roger Smith from Big O. The Big O series is this kind of cool anime that came out on Adult Swim kind of after the Cowboy Bebop era, I think. Let me look it up. It's basically like a mixture of kind of the, I mean, imagine if Bruce Wayne had a giant mech.
Huh.
And that's the best way I can describe it, because it had the same kind of like artwork that the early Batman had, just the Batman animated series of our time. Kind of this Art Deco feel. there were a lot of noir elements, a lot of things about like memory, and there was this like strong voiceover that the main character kind of did. So yeah, original run was 99 through 2001. So if you can find it anywhere, Big O is pretty good. Nice. It's a neo-noir with mechs. Nick, what's your number four?
My number four is from a movie called Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. Are you guys... All right, that was familiar with it. So basically, it's a Steve Martin movie that he made with Carl Reiner, who directed it. And they take clips of old noir movies. I think they use The Big Sleep. They use Double Indemnity. They use a bunch of other like old classic noir movies, and they use clips from them. And Steve Martin plays a detective, and then they'll intercut his scenes with scenes from those old movies to give it a more noir, like a more more literal noir feel to it. But since it's Steve Martin, he has a monologue that runs throughout it, and he's just so fun. Like Steve Martin, when he was at his best, was the funniest. So I pulled up just one of them, where he says, "All dames are alike. They reach down your throat so they can grab your heart, pull it out, and they throw it on the floor. And they step on them with their high heels. They spit on it. They shove it in the oven. They cook the shit out of it. And they slice it into little pieces, slam it on a hunk of toast, and they serve it to you. And they expect you to say, 'Thanks, honey. It's delicious.'"
That's awesome.
It's just, I rewatched this again.
Over like, the top. I love it.
I just rewatched it again the other day. And God, this movie, it's like such an absurd, goofy movie. Yeah. That I really think it could be in one of those movies that I rewatch like over and over again just to come up with lines to quote. Like he always says whenever somebody's like having a bad day, he's like, "You need a cup of my famous Java." And he makes coffee one time, and it's him like emptying out a bag of coffee grounds into the filter, and he does it for like a minute. He just like pours it, he's just like shaking the bag, pouring out coffee, and it takes so long, and then he puts like an egg in it.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't remember that.
It's a ridiculous movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is Max Payne, also. I think he's a really cool character that has always had this sort of gritty style to him, so. So yeah, Themo, what would be your number three?
It's going to be the journals from Rorschach and The Watchmen. I think probably the most famous of those is it's Rorschach kind of giving his running commentary on the city as a whole, and he talks about how all the blood and guts that are in the gutters of the city, and once they scab over from below the gutters, all the politicians and prostitutes will scream up asking him to help them. And he'll whisper back, "No." It's just so, he's just such a burnt out, you know, was a superhero, but now has a death wish. And is probably what Batman would be like in real life if there was really a Batman.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's great about Rorschach is, well, it's good and bad in that it's great that he was written that way. That Alan Moore kind of like saw that character for who he, you know, and wrote him so honestly.
Yeah.
Yet I think it's much like Rick, like, you know, the Rick and Morty fans that people complain about. I think there's a huge group of people that do not get Rorschach. They don't get that Rorschach is a villain. He's terrible.
Yeah.
Like he's really,
he sees everything. Awful. And that's one of the things that I was so angry that they cut out of the movie,
really clean him up in the movie.
Yeah. And he's a bad guy. Like he's a vigilante murderer. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he sees things in black and white, hence the fact that he has a black and white mask.
And literally, like, I mean, he's xenophobic, he's racist, he's, you know, right wing, he's ultra-nationalist. I mean,
they don't, and that was one of my, that's probably my favorite passage from the graphic novel that didn't make the cut to the movie, was he talks about seeing this fabric that Dr. Manhattan had created this new fabric that had black and white swirls on it and everything. And he talks about finding this fabric and knowing that was going to be his mask. And it was so beautiful because there was no gray. There's no gray. Mm-hmm. And it's like such a testament to where this guy's mind is that he sees things in absolutes and he's not going to give, even if it's going to cost the lives of thousands, if not millions of people. Sir, you're number three.
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 3.
So I'm going to go, the next two are kind of easy shots, so I'm sorry if I'm stepping on anybody's list. Sin City.
Nice.
I think it just does such a great job at it. Like, we've seen the trope so many times, and just what a... I still think it's a visual triumph. I mean, I'm not a huge Robert Rodriguez fan. I think El Mariachi is better than Desperado, yet I think that was the last really good film he ever made. Because Sin City can't be called his to me, because it's like not his actual vision. Yet he did it. He's a great craftsman. So yeah, I just thought it was really awesome. And it was a great use of a voiceover. Nick, what's your number 3?
My number 3 is a tie. It's two Billy Wilder movies. So one thing that we haven't really talked about yet is a lot of the noir movies are made by Europeans who came to the United States like around the World War II time. So Billy Wilder is one of them. Otto Preminger made Laura. Fritz Lang made some noir movies. He's from Germany also. So that's a pretty common theme among those filmmakers. And Billy Wilder made two of the best ones and two of the most famous ones. Sunset Boulevard is not, it's a little bit different because he's not a detective, it's about a screenwriter, but it has a lot of noir elements to it, and it, that includes this narration, which is told by a guy that we know right off the bat he died. He's telling it like from beyond the grave, and he's like, it's made clear up front that, hey, I'm the narrator, I'm dead. Yeah. Which is pretty ballsy. Like, yeah. I know American Beauty did that too 50 years later or whatever, but the way this is done is like much more clever, I think. And the other one that this tied with is Double Indemnity, and it's a classic movie with maybe the most famous femme fatale character. Mm-hmm. But the narration in it, it's also really cool because it's basically a guy telling his story on the phone. So you have the narration, but it actually fits within the context of the story. Like, it has an actual plot purpose, his narration as well.
I finally took that off my shame list.
Nice. You like it?
I mean, it's great.
It's a great
movie.
It's
so great.
Yeah. I still haven't seen it. Double Indemnity.
Good.
Kyle, what's your number 2?
My number 2 is the opening monologue from the game L.A. Noire. Really... sort of underrated game, come out in I think 2012 maybe, but it's a really cool detective movie, and they utilize a lot of facial like mocap to read suspects when you're like interrogating them, and their tells will like kind of like just watching them and how they react to your questioning will help you figure out if they did what they you accuse them of doing. But the opening monologue is just talking about the city of Los Angeles, and it's a really cool sort of montage of really nice shots of the city in the 40s, which is where the game is set. And watching it now, after having played through the entire game, you see parts or like areas where you eventually go. So they show shots of people going off to work and kissing their wives goodbye and like going to the construction yard and going to school and stuff like that. But then they'll also show like Hollywood sets where people are like riding on these fake horses and pretending they're in a Western movie. And but you eventually visit those locations while you play the game, and it's cool to have them talk about how Los Angeles is like this great city of I don't know, all these other like all the aspects of it, and it's just a really well written sort of intro to the game, and it is really cool. Cole Phelps, who you play as, would have made a good hard-boiled detective, but I left him off my list last week. But yeah, the opening monologue to L.A. Noire is a good monologue for this list. Thema, would be your number 2, I think.
I'm gonna switch because it has already come up. But my number 1 was originally gonna be Sin City / Dark Knight Returns. Frank Miller just has that cadence of just right to the point. Usually, I leave Batman off the list because otherwise he'd be on every list. But the one line from Dark Knight Returns that always gets me is talks about how he dragged a guy to like the top of this building, and it took a lot out of him. And the guy kind of wakes up and he's dangling off this massive skyscraper. And then Batman just says, "It's worth it just to hear the scream." Like, it's so so tough.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then there's Marv from Sin City, who has some of the best best noir lines. You know, things like, you know, "The after I'm done with them, the hell I send them to is going to seem like heaven. When you have a condition, it's bad to forget to take your medicine." Like, mm-hmm. stuff like that. It's just nice. So good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyhow, sir, your number two.
That's my number two. I'm going to go with Jessica Jones. I liked how the character has a problem, like, opening up to people, and you get a chance to actually see what she thinks, like, how she feels about things through the like, her internal monologue.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool. And yeah, I think I don't know if we got mentioned on her or not. Yeah, I think she is, like, one of the best. Like, Nick, you were saying, you think she's one of the best examples of,
like, a female hard-boiled detective. Yeah, there's not.
There's all the same tropes.
You're saying maybe the only, really, but
she's got the same. You know, she's got the flat, the drinking problem. She's got everything. Like, it's
yeah.
So, Nick, what's your number two?
My number two is not as, like, a good use of this, but I think it's important because of how bad it is. So we need to talk about it. It's the theatrical cut
of
Blade Runner, where, among other things, they tacked on a happy ending, which is absurd, like a terrible happy ending. And then they have Harrison Ford narrate, kind of explaining it throughout. And I think there could have been a way that they could have made it good. But part of it is Harrison Ford clearly hates everything he's saying when you listen to it. He just doesn't have it in him to do this. So it comes off so terribly. Like, I've never seen the theatrical cut all the way through, but I've seen the clips with the dialogue added in.
So I thought it was the other way around. I thought his stuff was cut in what most people saw.
So when it came out in 1982... It had his narration and had this happy ending, and then they did a director's cut in like the early 90s where they took all that out, basically. And there's scenes in that movie, like that movie's all about mood and atmosphere, and the scenes where normally it's just someone kind of like sitting there and you're in the environment.
And there should be dialogue over them.
You don't get to enjoy that or like immerse yourself in the movie because he's explaining things to you. And a lot of the things he's explaining to you, you can figure out on your own because you've been watching the movie. And like the plot of that movie is not very complicated. It's pretty straightforward. You don't need Harrison Ford explaining everything to you. So it really doesn't serve any good purpose. And since it wasn't written well, I'm sure it was hastily written like after a studio note. They grabbed him probably 6 months after the fact, and he's like, "I don't want to do this shit."
Especially, you know, like, he hated filming it, it's my understanding.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just like not a comfortable shoot because he was always wet and tired.
Oh, yeah, I bet that's true.
Yeah.
So it's just a terrible thing. And this movie like wasn't really a big hit when it first came out. It wasn't until later that it kind of garnered this cult following. I think that's probably a big part of the reason why. It's really bad. Kyle, you're number one.
My number one, it's less of a narration in the style that is the detective monologue, and it's more just some of the best narration in gaming history, I guess. But the way that the guy delivers it is kind of in the style of a noir. And the character is Rux from Bastion. Bastion, have you played Bastion?
Or? No, it's not. I've seen people play it.
It's one of these rare games where it's a fine game and it plays well and the combat is all right. But everyone just talks about how the narration in it is so perfect. It's a game by Supergiant Games. It's a smaller indie game. But it's really mysterious as far as the plot goes, but the narrator just explains everything that's going on screen to the point where, if you fall off and die as a character, the narrator will say like, "And he fell to his death," or something. And like, like he's narrating everything. So when you walk into a room and a bunch of enemies pop up, he'll like talk about them a little bit and like why they are the way that they are or something. And he adds a lot to what is going on. And he delivers it kind of like a, I don't want to say poor man's, Morgan Freeman, but, it kind of delivers it in that sort of tone, but it is, I don't know. It's really, really good. Well written, almost poetic what he says half the time, but, yeah, it's kind of a rare game that is really known for its sound design more than like playing the game itself. Hmm. But I'd recommend checking it out if you can. Bastion is a really cool small indie game. Thimo, what would be your number one?
My number one is from a Prairie Home Companion, Guy Noir. And this was a segment that they would do where they would essentially have just a noir segment, and it was laying into the trope. It was self-aware.
I remember it.
Yeah, right?
God, it was good.
I just remember there being a trumpet, and he would talk about the dame walking in, and his words, not mine. Don't send me emails. and things of that nature. But it was very, very, you know, it was playing in the sandbox of the trope. It was self-aware. It was a lot of fun. I guess that show is still on.
Yeah,
because I know he retired.
I can't think of who.
Garrison Keillor was the guy.
Well, the new guy. I can't think of any guy.
Oh, so there's a new.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was funny because they had, you know, their pledge drive or whatever, and he was like really thankful that people had kept him on the air and people were still listening. And it was really funny because I mean, he was really worried, I guess, that it wouldn't work out.
Oh gosh.
I mean, Garrison Keillor was doing it for, I mean, the entire time, right?
I mean, he had to be, it was decades. Yeah. I mean, he even had like a movie and books and is Thistle and Shamrock still on? That show Thistle and Shamrock was on Sunday nights. Foster my love of Celtic music. Anyhow, sir, you're number one.
So my number one is Affliction, starring Nick Nolte. It's a movie directed by Paul Schrader, and I'm of the opinion that Paul Schrader is the best writer from his era. I think that this film is like it's probably his best actual film that he directed. So it's Affliction is basically about Nick Nolte as this small town sheriff, and he's totally, you know, run down. He's an alcoholic, all the same tropes and stuff. Yet it's like really about his, it's about his like kind of personal problems, and you never quite know, is it all in his head or is this murder actually happening? And it's pretty cool. However, Willem Dafoe is in it, except his only role is to do this voiceover, and he shows him like one scene because he's the character's brother. So he's giving this voiceover about Nick Nolte and their family life, about like what he's like and about the different things he's experiencing. And it's just a really great like way to kind of like play with this trope and the idea that there's like a maybe unreliable narrator that's still more reliable than the main character because just of who they are, you know. It's really interesting. Mm. So you can check it out, Affliction, 1997. It's good. I think I've talked about it a bunch of times.
That's cool.
This shows. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is Tracer Bullitt, the Calvin and Hobbes character, his noir character. And I, it was my favorite of his kind of
alter egos.
Yeah, alter egos. And it's part of, I think, what got me into noir in the first place is just I loved the tone and cadence that he was written with. And I remember in one of the books, Bill Watterson writes about how I think he said he even liked the character, but he hated doing it because since it was written like a noir film, you had to use so much so much dark space that it was like terrible to have to actually draw.
Yeah. I was going to say it works well for the black and white sort of comic book mm-hmm. style, but
it looks
yeah.
really cool. I'm
guessing they never colorized that comic specifically.
No. I wish that he, and I don't anticipate that he will come out of retirement because he's been retired for like 27 years or whatever. 22 years. But I would love it if he did come out of retirement. Like I would pay so much just to have a full length Tracer Bullitt graphic novel. But I pulled up two of my favorites. It's him. He's got like the hat on. He's sitting at a desk and his feet are up, and he says, "Yeah, that's me, Tracer Bullet. I've got 8 slugs in me. One's lead and the rest are bourbon. The drinks pack a wallop, and I pack a revolver. I'm a private eye."
That is awesome.
And then the other one is, "I keep 2 magnums in my desk. I keep 2 magnums in my desk. One's a gun, and I keep it loaded. The other's a bottle, and it keeps me loaded."
That's so cool. Wow.
I'm Tracer Bullet.
He's a snoop.
I'm a professional snoop.
Yeah.
And in that frame, he's smoking a cigarette. As a 6-year-old, like, having a,
yeah,
you know, so this cool imaginary,
yeah,
whatever, alter ego. And he's talking about, like, being drunk on whiskey. And just so funny.
So it's more that he didn't like having to draw those scenes versus, like, having to write.
I think so.
Such dramatic. I guess he's used to writing, like,
yeah, I mean, he would write poems and stuff, yeah, like that, too. So I think it was more just the animation, at least from what I remember. I think that was in the 10th anniversary where he talks about how much he hated having to draw that. Yeah.
So are there, like, complete Tracer Bullet collections or no?
No, because it was pretty infrequent that he would do it. That there wasn't enough for something like that, unfortunately. But, yeah, Tracer Bullet is my number one Private Eye monologue. We got some feedback. This is hot off the presses. She just sent this in like an hour ago. This is from friend of the show, Eva. Enemy of the show. Sorry. Magnificent Bastards is all. I assume she means us and not the list.
I don't know. I don't know.
Number 5, Bobby Heenan. Number 4, Jesse Ventura, nice. The Body. Number 3 is Freddie Blassie. Number 2 is Ric Flair.
Nice.
And number 1 is Gorgeous George, whose impact cannot be overstated.
They're all...
it's all wrestling.
As I say, that's awesome. The Blassie, Freddie Blassie.
So thank you, Eva.
The fashion plate of professional wrestling. Ric Flair is on there.
I used to hate him so much.
Oh, he's, man, he was the best. He's the worst. When he'd show up with all of his money and he's custom made.
Like, I have no idea what you're
doing. Do you know how he started in wrestling? He used to be the guy after the show who was drunk and heckling the wrestlers. And just like from the audience and just like harassing them. And finally they were just like, man, this guy's got it. You know?
Jeez. That is awesome.
That's awesome.
Woo! Woo. All right, this is from Lawrence. He says, OTT bros, it was fun to listen to the conversation about The Matrix in the Mordaka episode. I've mentioned before that it's my favorite movie, and you guys basically captured the enthusiasm I had for it after first seeing it, and the renewed appreciation I typically have for it after rewatching it. I didn't have any problems with the sequels for the most part. They're obviously not on the level of the original, but I think they're perfectly acceptable follow-ups based on what they're trying to do. The Animatrix and the video games augment the appeal of the sequels, in my opinion. That said, though, Themo mentioned Mouse's death scene. I'm surprised no one brought up the scene where Neo shows up with a helicopter-mounted minigun to rescue Morpheus. That's my number one use of the trope.
Yeah.
I mean...
What scene did you... Did you say a specific scene for the Mordaka?
I mean...
The whole series.
I think probably the biggest or the security scene is the... I don't think I had a specific one because it's throughout... I think probably the most quoted one is... Guns, lots of guns, yeah. And they're surrounded by Mordaka, and then to the airport. But the one I had was Mouse's death scene is they burst in the door, and he's like just like he's looking at a centerfold of the lady in red, and then when they bust through the door, he knew that they were coming, and he just has 2 massive machine guns.
Oh yeah.
All right, and then we've got feedback from Paul in the UK. He said it's. Hey guys, it's a long time for me to suggest anything, but here's my 5 Magnificent Bastards in 3 different mediums in no order. Films, Hans Gruber from Die Hard, Harry Lime from The Third Man, Andy Dufresne from Shawshank Redemption, Raul Silva from Skyfall, and the Joker from The Dark Knight. Live action TV, Malcolm Tucker from The Thick of It, Francis Uruhart from the original UK version of House of Cards, too soon. Walter White from Breaking Bad, Sir Humphrey Appleby from Yes Minister. That can't be a real show. That sounds like
it sounds like I need to watch.
Wait, did you say House of Cards UK edition?
Yeah, the House of Cards was a UK show.
Wow.
We mentioned American Beauty earlier, and like that would be a really weird one to watch.
Now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just watched Baby Driver before all that Kevin Spacey stuff, and I'm like, Oh, no wonder he liked... what? No wonder he wanted to help Baby Al so much. Awful.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Allegedly.
No, he admitted to it.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, he's... It's okay, though. He's going to seek treatment for it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Tiger Woods.
And last TV one is Senator Clay Davis from The Wire. She...
Man, when he... I read his Clay yeah. Davis, I was like, wow, this is a good list.
She...
Shit.
We're the only ones who get that joke here.
Oh, you haven't seen The Wire either?
No, but I have seen a scene where they say fuck like for like.
I love that scene. Yeah. In Western animation, Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty, Eric Cartman from South Park, Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons, Dogbert from Dilbert.
Hmm. Nice.
Not a fan of Dilbert.
Oh.
And Scar from The Lion King.
I used to love Dilbert until the Scott, political. Like,
yeah,
he's a
until
thing.
Scott Adams became.
I still like Dilbert.
A sociopath.
Yeah. This goes back to separating the work from the artist.
Yeah, I never liked Dilbert, so it was a no loss to me.
Thank you guys for that. Those lists.
Yeah,
and the Matrix talk. I'm always
keen to talk about talk. Keen to talk some tricks.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I mean, you people know where to find us.
Yeah.
Come on.
On the troops.
On the troops. Yeah, that's where you'll find us.
Yep.